And welcome to the pre-show. And I hope you guys are okay. And those of you that... You know, I know a lot of people will... And I actually recommend this. I totally recommend this. I would have the video cast on, but basically listen to the audio. You know, every now and then you'll glance over because... For me, when I watched the... This is going to sound really kind of probably counterproductive, but I just... When I watch the video cast and I see myself going in and out of character, I it kind of fucks it up for me a little bit, you know? I don't know. But I will tell you this, and this is why it's worth the price of admission. We're going to begin in this next, what do you want to call it, run-up. I guess in the next, say, you know, segment, the next quarter of the year, we're going to begin to do, we're going to be using our Skype feature more and more and more to do interviews with real people. They'll be entertainment and comedy oriented. They will be with people that you know or, you know, we'd like you to know. We got Marc Maron already set, you know, in advance of the episode that I appear on. I think I'd like to get the ladies on, you know, Jessica St. Clair, Lennon Parham, those guys from Playin' House. I think I would like to get on the people, my co-star, I shouldn't say my co-star, you know, from the Playing House episode, Nancy, and God damn it, Nancy, now look at me, forget your last name. You want to know something? I wouldn't blame you if you never spoke to me again. You know, I'm serious. It's been one of those lives. It's just, it was one of those years. It's been one of those fucking lives. It's been an entire lifetime of this shit. It's not you. It's me. It's not you. It's me. Of course it's not you. Of course it's me. All right, let's go over to news, see what we have. I'll kind of read this shit off to you. And you guys can, you know, do what you want, when you want, how you want. This ain't what it is, man. I'll let you know what we're up to. This is not, you know, going to be what we're going to be talking about. There'll be all manner of things that we'll be talking about, but this is the stuff from the newspaper. Oh, God, I really don't give a shit, Google, you know. And this thing with Google Plus, would you give it up with Google Plus, Google? Give it the fuck up with Google Plus. I don't like it. I don't have enough fucking time for that shit. Now, I know what you guys are doing is you're attempting to compete. I certainly can dig that, man. I know when it is that you want to compete with shit and you want to... when we get over here, you can see what's up. This is an article that we're going to be doing here. Or this is a story. 13 symptoms of bipolar disorder. Man, I can't wait to do this one, you know. I think that'd be cool. Anyway, Google Plus... I don't understand what your story is with that shit at all. This fucking thing at Fort Hood, man, let me tell you something. Anybody that knows me or has listened to this radio show, you know that I've been, you know, vocal about gun rights. I believe in gun rights, okay? But I don't see anybody on the gun side. I don't see one of these simple-minded motherfuckers on the gun side coming up with any solutions. As long as everybody's going to bat for your fucking asses, and as long as everyone is laying it on the line and bleeding out for your motherfucking gun rights, which I'm one of them, what are you guys doing besides just... And I'm one of you, but it seems, you may ask me, well, what am I doing? What do I do? I'm talking about it, and I'm supporting. Let's put it this way: I am supporting whatever solution you guys want to have to the violent thing. Okay, to the fucking too many guns and too many motherfuckers getting shot. I mean, a good solution, not a bullshit solution like the NRA came up with after Sandy Hook, which was what was that? It was the more cops, yeah, cops in the schools. So that's what I'm about. All right. So the bipolar thing we're getting print off. And here I'll just kind of show you what we do when we do what we do and how we do it. And we can print it. And see? Now that is the print feature, is that right?
Yes, that's... Boy, what a question is that, Margaret? That's the print feature. By the way, I'm going to ignore the general because you're just, oh God, look at these poor people.
Yeah, this whole Fort Hood thing is really a sad, goddamn bullshit thing. What's my solution? Here it is. More fucking money for mental health care. That's right. Now, I know that there are a lot of people will say, well, there was no indication. You want to put money into something that's worthwhile, you put it into fucking finding out what makes these fucking people, okay? Don't tell me it's war, because there's plenty of guys that go to war and come home and are not violent. They've been studying this problem since the end of World War II. And I told you that one of the fears that came out of World War II, and I again, you know, World War II is one of the great templates, you know, for an awful lot of problems. I mean, you can look at how they dealt with things, what they learned. World War II, the mental health community in America was frightened that there would be a generation of American fighting men coming home who were so immune to the effects of violence that they would be going out and committing violent acts and robbing and stealing and raping, and it wouldn't mean anything to them, right? Okay, so it would be a whole generation of these guys who had just been in the middle of hell and back. That did not happen. In fact, the opposite happened, because when you're a healthy, well-adjusted, or relatively, let's say, socialized person, and you go through a living, breathing fucking hell like that, the first thing you want to do when you come home is get everything normal. I want it normal. I want my wife, I want my kids, I want my loved ones, I want God Almighty. I want to wake up and there's no fucking gunfire. I want to wake up and there's a nice, peaceful world sitting out there, right? That's exactly what happened. These men came home. They got married, they had kids, the baby boomer generation, they had tons of fucking kids, thousands of kids, millions of kids, because they wanted to populate the world again. They wanted to renew the world. You know, it was the healthiest possible instinct they could have at the time. So they had a whole bunch of spoiled, rotten motherfucking kids, and here we are, you know. So war does not necessarily create violent, horrific, horrifying people. War oftentimes does the opposite. It brings the very, very best out in people. It reaffirms the good things. It reaffirms the constructive things, the life-supporting things. I know that what I'm saying is absolutely and completely, you know, poison to a lot of people, but I don't think, if it is, they're not listening to what I'm saying. I'm just simply saying, I'm not saying I love war and let's have more wars because it'll make everything really cool. But when you're fighting because you have no choice, when you're fighting a war because it is the best possible solution to a problem, not the best, the only solution to the problem, and you must do what you must do, as opposed to going out and sadistically inflicting pain on people, then it does reaffirm in you the need never to go to war again, you know. So war is not what causes this. What causes this is a basic malfunction happening inside the head, between the ears of the person. What is it? Where is it from? Where does it begin? Where does it end? I don't know. Oh, wow. That's kind of cool. Check it out, man. It's like a woo. I can do a bunny rabbit thing, too.
Hi,
I'm the horse. A horse is a horse, of course, but no. Okay. When I was a kid, man, that was like one of my favorite things. Fucking shadow puppets? God damn. Because we were poor. We couldn't afford real puppets, so we just blocked the light out. This 1970, did you know that there was a 1977 tragedy? Yeah, there was. A 1977 Malaysia Air tragedy, a hijacking, or so they think. They never really found out what happened to this plane in 1977. But they do know from the air traffic control tapes, from the cockpit tapes, because they're two different things, as you know. There's one is the cockpit recorder, the other are the tapes from air traffic control. Critical patients have injuries to neck and potential spine injuries, according to the doctors. And these are doctors in Temple, Texas. They're talking right now to the main trauma people. Jesus Christ. Jesus H. Christ. I don't know whether the general... I'll just keep you far away from this topic today, General.
Looking at me now,
I even look good in the mirror.
Here, I'm going to show you this, guys. Stick around. I got a... You can see I'm futzing with it. I want to get you the full picture. How do we go? Oh, there it is. Okay. Hold on. Hold on. It's going to be okay. I'm going to just... Wait a minute, man. I got to fucking turn things off here and shut things down. You know how it is. All right. So let's see what we can do here.
Sherrington feels his relationship with his father will forever be stuck in 1977. His father, Richard, died when he was just 12 years old, about the same age his own son is today.
I can only guess what he was like, and he never really got to know me as an adult. And I guess that is a feeling of regret, you know, and then obviously meeting my family and my children.
100 passengers and crew, including Richard Sherrington, just 37 years old, were all killed when their plane was hijacked and crashed in swampland in Tanjung Kapang, Johor, the deadliest event in Malaysia Airlines history until the disappearance of MH370. Transcripts of the last 32 minutes of Flight 653 show that a hijacker entered the cockpit, demanding the pilot cut all radio contact. The captain says he'll do whatever he wants, but the hijacker shoots the captain and first officer, then the plane crashes. Who the hijacker was remains a mystery to this day. CNN has spoken to a woman whose father also died on board Flight 653. She says the disappearance of MH370 has brought back difficult memories. But the hardest thing of all, she says, is that 37 years down the line, we still don't know the truth.
For a few years, it was kind of a bleak kind of time where we just felt really wounded, you know. So, yeah, it really marked a moment where from that time on, you're kind of just pulling yourselves back together again. And that's, you know, that's what will happen with these people out in Malaysia now. This will be the thing that you refer to for a long, long time.
For years, Tom told me, he imagined his father was lost and wandering in the jungle where his plane had crashed, waiting to be rescued.
But we're seeing your dad's name on a stone sort of so far away.
As an adult, he made a pilgrimage to the crash site. Visiting the memorial has been a key part of the Sherrington family's acceptance. Some kind of monument or place to go to is something he thinks families of MH370 will need, as well as each other.
I would say that, you know, they should stick together as much as possible and communicate with each other and share their kind of experiences. And I think that's helpful for people to have that shared experience.
And memories. Tom enjoys listening to recordings of his father singing, sharing them with his children. But for now, the grieving process is yet to begin. Families are still in shock, some in denial.
It's not something which goes away quickly, and it's you do have to get used to the fact it's a kind of lifetime of processing the bereavement. You know, it's there's an initial phase where it's really, really hard, and then it gets easier. It does get easier, but it never goes away. That sense of loss never ever goes away.
Simon Mawson, CNN, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
That's kind of a drag, isn't it? Isn't that fucked up? You know, it's nice to see that his life turned into such it looks like a lovely thing as his kids are there and he's showing them, you know, here's your grandfather who you never met. And he turned out to be seems to be a pretty well-adjusted guy. I don't know. After they interviewed him, he may go downstairs where he keeps the gimp in a box, you know, and just, okay, gimp. I shouldn't say that, but I guess I did. So, yeah, bummer, people. This cup of coffee I've got right here, this is the only thing keeping me from God knows what, you know, just jumping off a roof or something. This is the greatest cup of coffee. Oh, God, it's good. Will I have time to make another? Fuck no. God damn it. I could do it right now. If I start right now, I could get done. I will. I'm going to do that. I will. Okay. I'll be right back. I know it's not much of a pre-show, but I can't, you know, I'm making fucking coffee. What do you want from me? Never mind, I got a better idea. I mean, it's about caffeine, isn't it? Yeah, okay. It's about the speed, ain't it? Ain't that what it's about? You know, because it's about that, yeah. Speaking of speed, hold on. All of the faces life can show. All right, I'm back. What? Wait a minute. I actually take sinus medicine because I got these headaches. I got allergies this time of year that are a fucking bitch and a half. But I should very much
think that
I think everybody, I really believe this, and I was talking to a friend of mine, oh, I know who it was Nikki, you know, and you guys know, maybe some of you guys know that Nikki was in drug counseling for a while in her life, and probably still is, but we were talking about drug addiction and the like. And, you know, she indicated to me that, or I indicated to her, or one of us indicated to the other, we kind of nodded and winked. And no, I said that I believe that, you know, drug addiction can be defeated because of the pharmacology that is happening right now around it. And, we were talking about, right now, you know, what is it about meth that makes it the white trash drug of choice? I don't understand that. Do you? Methamphetamine is the poor white trash drug of choice. It's speed, and maybe that's, I don't know, what does that mean, you know? Just it kind of pumps you up and makes you feel like you're better than you are, you know, that you, no, I'm not one of them. I'm not one of those underclass, poor, lazy fucks. I've got it going on. I'm a powerful, maybe it's because of the white race's traditional sense that it should be the empowered and superior race. And when you wake up in the morning and you look at the fucking trailer that you're in, you know, I don't know, but you wake up in the morning, you look at the fucking trailer you're in, and you look at all the shit that you have to deal with, and you realize you ain't any of that shit, so your ass is a trash can of an ass, and, you know, you therefore need to feel like you got to get out of the trash can and get back into the shit, and so you take your methamphetamines. Oh, here's a great article. You guys are going to love this. This is about screaming fucking brats. I'm kidding around. I mean, I'm not kidding. I mean, I don't. Who likes it? But I don't blame the children. We continue to struggle here a little bit with this fucking thing. I just want to kind of make this. I don't know what I'm going to have to do. What happens is the mic boom keeps hitting this. We'll get it together, man. We'll get it together. We'll get it together. Yeah, we'll get it together. Yeah, no problem, man. You know. This is a kind of an interesting story. Shopping center. This is a shopping center in Australia. And one of the things that I often find when I'm doing the... All right, we have a problem here. We got a formatting problem. I don't know what's causing this. Shit. No, that won't do. No, 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 that won't do. That won't do. No, no. Let's see. Well, I don't know, other than to say... This is the thing, I keep trying to keep this from happening. I guess we'll just... Oh, you fucking cunt. Excuse my French. God damn it. I have to live with it. A lot of times when we're doing, you know, pulling news and shit, I got to move this over because what we did is we panned the thing back. A lot of times when we're pulling news and shit, a lot of times what happens is we will see stories from Australia or from England. I don't know that it's from Australia or England until we actually see the story, you know, and it'll say all these amazing things, you know, banning screaming kids, you know, there's not going to be any smoking inside of rocket ships, there's going to be, you know, there'll be injections into your ass for youth serum or some shit. And then you'll realize, you'll be sitting there going, God, this is amazing shit, and you realize, this is an experiment happening in Bath, England. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with anything even remotely close to the shit that your life is about. So that... Okay. Better get this done here. We got exactly 9 fucking minutes. Captain... cereal boxes that stare increase sales. In other words, if there's a cereal box with a character on it that stares back at your kid, it sells big time. And I'll bet you anything, the Delmonico, as we have now come to call Jason J. Delmonico, the Delmonico is going, Margaret's going to have a lot to say about.
I noticed that when I go to the store, the Delmonico is looking.
Wait. Are you actually calling this punk kid the Delmonico?
You're talking about my son. So please, have a care.
Look, I've got a care. I've got so many cares, I'll sell you one. You see what I say?
Very funny, General. Don't talk about the Delmonico that way. You'll wind up without any testicles. Do you really want to go into the day, General, sans testicles? Or as they say, sans testicales? Do you want that?
Where is that, in Mexico?
In Mexico, why, you simple-minded...
By the way, this weekend I am going to be, I think I'm going to go to the Langham in Pasadena. I love the Langham Hotel. I love the Langham Hotel better than when it was the I love the Langham Hotel better than when it was the Ritz-Carlton. See, one of the things about being single, you know, that's really good is I can justify spending fucking money on myself, see? It's not like I'm spending it on 2 people or a family of people. It's just me, just, you know. So I can go and blow all kinds of dough. I'm not blowing all kinds of dough, but, you know, you can, a couple of fucking nights, and some people say, well, that's not the beach, Phil. That's just going into Pasadena. Yeah, you know. It's a place where I can go, and somebody will serve me a really good fucking meal, and somebody will serve me a really good drink. And it's nothing I have to clean up. Don't you ever do that? Don't you ever just take the weekend, go to a hotel, do a hotel for the weekend? I like to do that. But the Langham is in Pasadena. It used to be the Ritz-Carlton there on Oak Knoll. And I have a long history with the Langham Hotel. I've got a long history with that property because it was there that I witnessed my very first, gay. No, I'm kidding. It was there that I witnessed my father. God damn it. What's wrong with this, man? We got a formatting problem with the printer on this bitch. No, it was there that I witnessed my very first radio show. It was there that I saw KRLA, and Casey Kasem and Emperor Hudson and all these guys. That's where they worked. And it used to be the Huntington Sheraton. It was owned by the Sheraton. And then it was something else. I don't know what it was. There were all these years I went away and I was gone and I don't know what happened there. And then it became the Ritz-Carlton. And that's what I came to know it in the 90s. It was the Ritz-Carlton. And then the Ritz-Carlton sold it and it became the Langham. Well, I gotta tell you something. It's way better than the Ritz-Carlton. The Langham Hotel is way fucking nicer. Way nicer. I mean, it just is. I don't know what to tell you. It's appointed. It's actually appointed more simply, but it's more beautiful in there. It's the service is every bit as good, if not better. It's just really classy, man. It doesn't look like a fucking. I'm sorry to say this, man, but a Ritz is like a. It's a chain. And probably the Langham is too, but I've never fucking heard of the Langham Hotel. Have you? But I liked it, and so I'm probably going to go there for to hang out for the weekend. And, you know, just sit at the bar. They got a great fucking bar. And the hotel itself, no matter who owns it, the hotel itself is on a gorgeous piece of property. Big, beautiful, broad lawns and trees, and sits there right in the with the foothills of the San Gabriel Mountains right behind it. It's an enormous, ornate, sort of, you know, early 20th century style, you know, beautiful rooms overlooking the patios and verandas and shit. And anyway, you know, they have a restaurant there. They got a great little bar there. And I like it. I like it. And what's more, someday I'm going to own it. Why do I keep looking down here? Because I'm afraid there's a little man hiding behind the printer. He's just going to go,
"Hey, Mr. Henry."
I'm telling you, man. Yeah, that's pretty funny. You've been hanging out in the studio all night. That's why shit gets busted in here, isn't it? Yeah. When I step on your ass. Oh, that'll be a glorious day when I step on you, man.
You're not going to step on me.
Yeah, I will. I'll put my fucking foot on you and flatten your motherfucking ass. Yeah, oh, that felt good. Yeah.
My God, it sounded like you put your penis in its ass.
Maybe. Maybe I did.
God, are we on the air?
Yeah, we are, sort of.
Oh, my God.
It's funny, Margaret, how the first thing you thought of was me sodomizing a tiny imp, a pixie. That's what you thought of.
That's right, Phil, because I know the company I keep.
No, Margaret, you can't go there. Sorry, we just got to look inside the blackness of your soul. Sodomizing a pixie.
Oh, I see. So in other words, were I male, that's what I'd want. How dare you?
That's exactly what we're thinking, Margaret. Were you a man, you'd want to put your dick in a pixie's ass. Hey, thank you. We'll be right back here on NBC. Were you a man, you'd put your dick in a pixie's ass, wouldn't you?
You can... How dare you?
We're going to talk about this on the air.
Phil, I will have no part of it.
Margaret, you have to, because you started it.
Yeah, you did, Miss Gray.
Yeah, you did, Miss Gray.
Margaret, I want you to...
I want to get Father McQuarters on the show, but I'm not... I don't know where to put him in the room, you know?
Father McQuarters, why don't you come over here? Thank you very much.
Well, Margaret, thank you very much. Well, Margaret, I heard what you're saying. You talked about to put the dick in the pixie's ass. Well, I don't think it's the right thing to do.
Father McQuarters.
No, Margaret. Margaret, I've known you since you're a child. I've known you since you're a small little novitiate in the convent. I've known you since you're a young girl, novitiate in the convent there at the parish of St. Rebecca in the foothills of the Sierra Madre. And there it was there that you and your other little girlfriends would strip down in the morning and Father McQuarters would peek around the corner and go, "Woo!
You are sick? God, I'd love to... What I wouldn't give for 5 minutes alone with you."
Really?
Not that way.
Shit.
All right. Let's get set, man. Let's get set to rock this bitch! Huh? Ain't no stopping us now, motherfuckers. Ready? Welcome to the live feed here on TuneIn and PhilHenryShow.com. I don't know why I'm all formal and shit, because during the... Oh, God, did you check that out? What was that?
It looked to me like a man had a... holy God.
Oh, this is Ron Burgundy. Oh, it was a... It looked like a giant scarab coming out of a guy's mouth. I have no idea. All right, stick around, folks, because we're about ready to start this motherfucker. And we will do it right now.